What a difference 7 days can make. When we recorded the 122nd episode of this podcast, we were fearing the worst, with Reading's playoff place looking precarious from an almighty Fulham charge. Fast forward a week later, and it's all looking rosy at the Mad Stad as Reading pull off a surprising 2-0 win at Hillsborough to beat Sheffield Wednesday, and Fulham suffer an almighty foul-up of a week that sees them pick up just 1 point from six against two bottom five sides. We'll try and figure out, are we there? Can we book those days off work yet? Or is there still some work to be done in twists and turns in the playoff race? That's all coming up on the Tyler Sten Podcast, episode number 123. Thank you very much indeed for joining us this week. As always, my name is Dan Wimbush, editor of thetylersten.com. And this week's guests are Mr. Alan West. Westy, hello.
Hello. Hello, everyone.
And Mr. Mark Mayo. Mark, you're back. Welcome along.
Yeah, thank you. I was just thinking the playoff final is usually a Monday, isn't it?
It's Bank Holiday Monday, yes.
Yeah,
Monday.
I can get that off. That should be right.
Yeah, I don't know. Us shift folk sometimes don't get those bank holidays off. But I don't think they've even set the dates for the semi-finals yet, so those are going to be up in the air.
They're usually like Thursday night or any kind of random time, aren't they?
Yeah, anyway, we're getting ahead of ourselves.
Yeah, we'll worry about the semis first.
Yeah, we don't want to jinx this. I remember in the when we're playing Villa in the Cup quarter-finals and we were 2-0 up at half-time, I sat there thinking, how am I going to get to Wembley?
Yeah, no, I was thinking that as well.
Sure enough,
yeah, Mr. Carew popped up.
Yeah, John Carew has one good game in a Villa shirt, and that's it. Anyway, chaps, thanks very much for joining me. Before we move on into the recap and the rest of the show, big thank you to everyone who has contributed to the Patreon campaign. Big thanks this week to Richard Holloway, Mike Crone, Dave Stevens, and Ben Greenwood in particular. You may have noticed our YouTube channel at youtube.com/TylerSten. Mark, you put up a video yesterday looking at the playoff run-in.
Yeah, it went up just about as much as I planned. So hopefully we'll have maybe a weekly or sort of bi-weekly sort of video.
Yep, and I did the post-game show with Royal Hoops after the win at Wednesday. And we did, Westy, myself, you, and Rob Langan, we did the Pub Chat Extra as well. So lots going up on that channel. But I mentioned Ben Greenwood because if you've noticed the graphics around the side of the screen, he is a very, very talented individual who put those together for us. So a big thank you to him in particular and to everyone who continues to support the show, the website, the YouTube channel, everything. Every like you give us, every thumbs up, every comment, it all counts. So thank you very much. Anyway, lots to get onto on this show, starting with that win at Hillsborough. So we'll move on in to the recap.
View from the Tarlhurst end. Recapping this week's championship action.
Westy, I would have said that not many people had given us a chance of winning at Hillsborough, but you did.
Yeah, I know. One of my rare correct predictions. Well done, Alan.
Was that made out of more hope than expectation, though?
No, I just had a feeling that a lot of the games, I know we've lost a lot of away games recently, but I always say this about a championship, they are very thin margins between getting beat and winning. And I thought the Huddersfield game, Reading could have quite easily have won. Given that penalty, we score it, we win the game, everyone's happy. And I thought Sheffield Wednesday had a lot of injuries and they've been on a bad run. And I thought if Reading can get an early goal, then the crowd were on a turning point. And I think you heard the boos ring out at the end anyway. I think Sheffield Wednesday are starting to slide and I thought it was a good time to play them. And we've done it and it was great. And like I said, you said as well in the intro, what a difference a week makes. 1 minute we're looking over our shoulders, next minute we're looking like we're more nailed on for a playoff finish. And I think it's just championship football for you. It could go any way in any game.
Mark, did Reading deserve 3 points from this one?
Yeah, I think a lot of people will be looking at Ali Alhabsi's performance and saying that that was kind of the decisive factor. But at the end of the day, you've got to have a goalkeeper and your goalkeeper has to perform for you. And if your goalkeeper does well, then that's just as good a part of the team as your striker doing well or your centre-back throwing his way into a few blocks and what have you. So, yeah, I think looking at the highlights, there was definitely a sense that the Reading got the decisive moments in the game. And as Westy say, Sheffield Wednesday aren't as good as Huddersfield. They aren't as good as Brighton. So going away and getting there was certainly justified.
Westy, I noticed Carlos Carvajal, the Sheffield Wednesday manager, moaning after the game that, you know, they deserve to win this one. They had all the chances and they just came up against a goalkeeper in great form. The Sheffield Wednesday fans are even less kind to Reading than that, saying they're one of the worst sides that have ever turned up at Hillsborough and stuff like that. I look at that, though, and I say, well done, Yap Stan, because Reading have needed to do that away from home.
Yeah.
And put in that sort of defensive grit for a while.
Yeah, we've struggled to keep clean sheets away from home. We all know that. And so if he's saying that we've sat in and we've tried to win the game by defending, then so what? We've won the game. The onus is on the home team to score, isn't it? It's not for us to sit there and let them play past us. And I thought, yeah, okay, well, Alhabsi did make a lot of saves. But when the decisive moments came, we scored early and then we managed to catch them on the break. And that is the perfect the way it performs, as far as I'm concerned. You're not there to entertain the home crowd. You're there to win the game. And that's exactly what they've done.
Yeah, and it's something the Reading just haven't been able to do against those top sides. To get that monkey off our backs, get those 3 points is a massive thing.
Sounds a bit sour grapes, though, as well, doesn't it, from their manager?
He says, I think he said it's the worst week he's had as Sheffield Wednesday manager.
well, again, your team needs to be more decisive in front of goal. Simple as that.
Absolutely. Mark, on Ali Alhabsi, string of fine saves, unanimous man of the match from everybody. Just some remarkable stops out of nowhere. The one where he sort of claws it from behind him, going down to his right in particular, stood out for me. But I'm quite interested to know now, I mean, we've had Ali Alhabsi now for two seasons. Where does he rank for you among Reading goalkeepers? Is he in sort of, is he getting into the Marcus Hanneman, Shaka Hislop territory yet? Or has he still got some way to go before he can be talked about in those type of terms?
I think the thing with Hanneman for the lot of the time is that he didn't play in a team that was under the cosh, did he really? He's playing for a team that was strolling the Championship, and then in the Premier League as well, they were, you know, comfortable for large parts. And he did pop up with the odd save, but they were more like camera saves. I thought Hanneman made quite a lot. He didn't make the one-on-ones. He made the like diving free kick sort of parries and what have you, is what I noticed more. Federici, I would say, is probably the most sort of striking keeper we've had in the past like 10, 15 years since Hislop probably. And he's been, you know, kind of outshone in a sense by Alhabsi, because Alhabsi showed that he can make those kind of saves and cut the errors out of his game, which Federici couldn't do.
Where would you put him, Westy?
I think he's probably, from goalkeepers I've seen, I think he's definitely one of the best shot stoppers. He's a better shot stopper than Hanneman, definitely. Federici was, again, a good shot stopper, but his basic goalkeeping, I thought, was poor sometimes. His kicking was good. I think there's faults in all of them, but I would put him definitely in the top three.
Really?
Yeah, definitely. Hislop, again, if you watched Hislop in his early career at Reading, he was prone to the odd. He'd miss a hell of a lot of crosses until, again, he sort of established himself as a first team and then went on to be the most expensive goalkeeper in Britain at the time when he got sold. But yeah, I think every goalkeeper we've had has had a fault, but how Habsies is just that he happens to switch off now and again, which we've seen quite a lot, not so much of that this year, where we see it quite a lot last year. And to be fair to our Habsy, he stands out more because he's played in weak Reading sides and he's had to save them, whereas Hanneman played in good Reading sides and, again, he was not used as much as Alhabsi has been over the last two or three seasons.
Yeah, I mean, it's remarkable progress from him considering where he was at the end of 2015. We had discussions about Jonathan Bond coming back into the team. Do we need a new goalkeeper entirely? And he's gone on, one player of the season, gone on this season, done brilliantly well. Like you mentioned, he's had the odd cock-up. You know, we saw at Old Trafford, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But just a really good keeper, and he fully deserves that new contract. You still do worry, though, that there's that howler in him, and I've just got these nightmare scenarios in
my head. I think, again, where we have to give Alhabsi respect is the fact that he's been asked to play as a sweeper keeper this year, which I can see, and I think we all know, that he's not entirely used to. And I think he's done a reasonably good job, but like I say, he still makes me extremely nervous when they give the ball back to him.
What about the men in front of him on Friday night, Mark? We didn't see Paul McShane. He didn't recover from injury in time to be in the squad. Liam Moore does come in. I thought Liam Moore had a great game. Tyler Blackett putting in a tidy little performance as well. What did you think of the whole defensive unit? Was it a better performance?
I mean, the amount of shots that came in, you could say no, perhaps, but they were under the cosh for a long amount of time, certainly towards the end of the game. And, you know, the chances that Sheffield Wednesday had, you wouldn't say they were clear-cut chances. Like, the one-on-one sort of Lucas Jau miss that happened in the first game back in Badeski was certainly the type of chance that you don't want to concede every time. And these sort of shots were from, you know, corners. They were lumping into the box, getting good headers on it, forcing Alhabsi into saves. I didn't think that there was any particular worries about like the chances that were being created. They were just well-taken half chances that you are going to get in these games.
What I really liked, Westy, was the compactness. You go back and watch the highlights. The defence, we've talked for long periods in the season about the midfield and the defence being quite far apart. We didn't see that on Friday night. They were really well-drilled, tightly in, and that was a really welcome sight.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, especially from the last couple of away games, we've noticed that we've been susceptible to conceding goals when we've been attacking. I think we've been caught a lot, and I think that obviously Abstam must have thought we need to tidy things up in midfield here and make sure we're a lot more compact, and that's what they did. I think the only time we looked like we could concede goals, and for most of the chances they had, were from balls in the air. We looked a bit weak aerially without McShane at the back there, whereas Blackett's sort of sometimes a bit slow to react, and Moore's a good header of the ball, but he's not the tallest centre back in the world, so we did look a bit weak from that sort of situation. But like I say, Alhabsi come to the rescue, and we got, I thought, a deserved 3 points.
What about the front three then? Because Jan Kerman gets a goal. It's his 10th of the season. Fantastic effort from him. He's had three assists as well. He's also on track. You forget, you know, for a guy of his age, he's racked up over 2,500 minutes this season. His previous best in England is 2,627. So in the next game, he's probably going to break that with room to spare. He's put in a really tough shift this season.
He's done great. And like I say, he's played up front on his own quite a lot as well this year. And he's been asked to do the dirty work. And to be fair to Jan Kermigan, he does run, doesn't he? He does put in a shift up front. He does try to defend the best he can from his full position, which helps the team immeasurably. And we know how good he is at set pieces and defending anyway. So Jan Kermigan, like I say, was he 36 now, coming up 37?
I think so, yeah.
Like I say, he's not even used to playing a full championship season, and they've tried to rest him on occasions this year, and I think we always look a lot weaker without him in the side and a lot stronger with him in it.
Yeah, really well taken goal as well, Mark.
Yeah, absolutely, and I think he's benefiting from having McCleary and Behrens like consistent wingers alongside him as well, which he hasn't had previously, and we certainly didn't have last year a known front three, and that's Yapstan's first choice, and he's sticking with it, and Kermigan is knowing his role within that, and took his goal very well on Friday night.
Yeah, I didn't think the wingers had that good of a game, actually. I thought they were the possible one weak point. I don't think they provided enough of an outlet. I think Behrens just had one of those games where he just sort of drifts about. McCleary's tried hard, but McCleary, Westy, just really still not seeming to click for him at the moment.
No, but it's McCleary for you. He has these little bounces in the season where he has five or six really good games. But whatever you think about McCleary, with McCleary in the team, he gives the other side something to worry about. And I think they miss him more than any of the other wingers if he doesn't play.
Speaking of not clicking, Mark, Lewis Graben comes on again, another game without a goal for him. He was getting a particular, you could tell Tim Deller was not happy with him. And
old Vidra repeat sort of.
Yeah, sort of. Tim doesn't like these Premier League strikers that come down to Reading. But I mean, is it at the stage now where Graben is just firmly a bench player, or has he still got a role in the starting lineup, do you think?
I kind of feel bad for him because he doesn't ever get put up as a striker. And he obviously is an out-and-out forward. I don't know if Sheffield Wednesday, did he actually get played as a centre-forward?
He
forward,
just came on the wing.
Just
really,
kind of on the wing, yeah. Kind of make things happen a little bit. But that's the problem with him, is I've never seen him play in those positions in his career before. He did well at Bournemouth as part of a front two. We don't play a front two. So the issue may have been whether he was the right signing to make in the first place.
Yeah, you wonder what's going to happen if Callum Harriott comes back as well, because that's sort of the position that Harriott was occupying as well. I really want to see Graben burst his life. And I think there's goals in him, Westy. He just needs to get that first one.
Yeah.
I wish he had been at the end of, the goal that Popper gets right at the end. You know, really well taken goal from Popper. And nice to see him come up with impacts, but sort of for the greater good, I almost wanted it to go to Graben.
Yeah, he's kind of had opportunities as well over the last couple of weeks to score, hasn't he? And he seems to not want to pull the trigger, or he makes the wrong decision in the position where he should be scoring a goal, or at least getting a shot off. I think you can see that Graben is a good footballer. He's just not doing enough to win the fans over, I suppose, is one way of putting it, because he just needs to put a little bit more effort in, I think. And I'd say the goals will come for him, but he's got to make the effort to score goals, if that makes sense. He needs to put himself out a little bit more, because I don't think he's giving all he's got at the moment.
Mm. Well, fingers crossed he gets that first goal. I just think as soon as that first goal comes, I think the floodgate's going to open. I just think he needs that little confidence boost that all strikers do. Yap's comments on the game. He said it was a very big game, and in how we played, how we performed, how we've been working together this week, the players deserve a big compliment. The whole week after the defeat of Preston, we've been speaking about what we need to improve upon, what we need to do better. Normally, if we press very hard at the pitch, go forward and try to win the ball early, sometimes by doing that, we've been open, you can get caught out on the break. It's happened to us in a couple of games now. So we spoke about it. If we can press forward, then we should do it. But if it's not possible, we can sit back a bit and the wingers can drop in as well. But for that to work, everyone needs to do their job, and everyone did their job very well today. They worked very hard defensively to keep that clean sheet.
Yeah, as I say, he's obviously recognised that we did concede a lot of goals on the break. We could all see it. It wasn't rocket science to figure that out, and he's obviously addressed it, and we got a win out of it. So well done, Yapstan.
It's quite a far cry from the Leeds away game earlier in the season when we lost 2-0 up there with like 78% of the possession, and Stan was like, "Oh, I don't want to be part of a club that plays football in the sort of Leeds way." And I'm not saying that we, you know, had 20% possession and sat in all game.
Yeah, they're 47% of the ball.
It's a move in that direction, isn't it? And it shows that he's been a little bit more pragmatic, and it's coming off with good results.
Yeah, and it's not worked against the top sides, has it? The way we have been playing away from home, it's not worked. So well done to him for addressing it and thinking, actually, we need to do something different to win matches. And that's what he did.
Absolutely. There is nothing to be gained. Well, I say there's nothing to be gained. Yeah, there's a learning curve and players get experience. But at this stage of the season, there's not a lot to be gained from sticking so rigidly by your principles and being so inflexible. And you could tell, I remember reading Stam's comments last week, you could tell he sees this and but what he said after the Sheffield Wednesday game as well. He's gone about it. He's gone to the training ground. They've done something about it. And this is what they're going to have to do in the playoffs, because they cannot afford to have that sort of 3-0 horror show we saw at Brighton if they're away in the playoffs, because they'll just get knocked out.
Yeah.
It's as simple as that, yeah. And I think, it would look like a poor season for Yapstam now if they dropped out of the playoffs. I know it sounds ridiculous because where we've been over the last two seasons, but if Reading could finish seventh now, that'll look like a failure, I think.
Absolutely.
And it won't look good for Yapstam at all. So as long as he keeps them in the playoffs, well done, Yapstam, you've had a great season. If you drop out of it now after being there all year, and they say, well, how come you, when you look back at it in time, you think, well, we beat 4-0 there, we got beat 3-0 there, that's going to look like he's done a poor job rather than the great job that he obviously has done.
Well, fortunately, the playoff picture is looking much better for us, as mentioned at the top of the show. Running out to 67 points, 5 now clear of Sheffield Wednesday in 6th spot. But the bigger bonus for Reading this week was, as mentioned, we talked about on last week's show, Fulham had 2 home games against Blackburn, who I think were in the bottom 3, and Wolves, who were a couple of places outside of it, at home, rampant form, concede a last-minute equaliser against Blackburn, only 1 point there, and then lose at home to Wolves on Saturday as well. Suddenly, they've only picked up 1 point from 6. They're 6 points behind Reading now, having played the same number of games.
Yep.
Mark, you looked at the running in detail. Who are the biggest threats now? Is it still Fulham, or is there somebody else running the rails?
Fulham have a good run in. Sheffield Wednesday have the best run in by some considerable distance, which I don't think will worry us too much, given that obviously we just beat them. The problem is, I think, is that Norwich have a really difficult run in, and that means that if they start winning, and if they get those wins against, they play like Brighton, Leeds, maybe good for us looking above us, but if they can mount a good run from behind, then they'll have a surge in momentum going into the playoffs if they do make it. So that's the sort of thing that worries me a little bit more than, like, Fulham play Sheffield Wednesday on the last game of the season as well. So that's going to be positive for us in some way, you would hope.
Yeah, well, it almost sort of guarantees us a couple of extra points, doesn't it? I've not delved quite into the minutiae of the mathematics, but it is almost worth an extra point or two.
Yeah, it's obviously another game that one of them's going to lose or not pick up 3 points, isn't it? So it knocks another game off of them catching us up. So I think now, when you look at Reading's last 4 games, if they don't end up in the playoffs, then that would be a disaster.
Yeah.
I think from the position they're in now, to be 8 games left and 6 points clear of the team that are in 7th, I think it's pretty much nailed on.
Yeah, I think the only way you could excuse it is if literally 2 teams below, if say Fulham and Norwich won their last 8 games.
Yeah.
And if they win their last 8 games and Reading won 5 out of 8 and missed out, then you would go, you know what? Teams just had a freak season. There's nothing we can do. If Reading end up on 80 points and don't make it.
Yeah, that would be ridiculous. I think if Reading were to go and beat Leeds next time we play, I think then everyone would pretty much be booking their tickets for the semi-final.
Done deal. Well, we've got a couple of questions about the playoff race and who the playoff picture, should I say, and who people would like to see Reading face. That's coming up in the mailbag as well. But in the meantime, we shall move along because there's a few bits and pieces to discuss. That's coming up in News Bites.
Reading News Bites on the Tarlhurst End podcast.
Okay, so we move from discussions about whether Reading parked the bus to where you're going to park your car next season. See what I've done
there. If there is a car park.
Yeah, if there is a car park, yes.
On the ice rink.
The reason we're discussing this is because the club have sent out renewal letters to fans who have car parking permits for the Maleski Stadium, and they've announced a pretty hefty whack of a price rise. They've gone up from £180 to £230 per season next year. Star have issued a response that you can read on their website and on the Tarlhurst End as well. They're concerned about such a massive rise. I mean, it's about 30%. And fans are not happy because it means that if you get a season ticket for parking, it's not really saving you any money on parking on the day anymore. Also, the club's proposed policy to shut the car park half an hour before kickoff has also caused a bit of a stir for a lot of people that travel from far away. That's the very reason I think a lot of them get those permits, is because they know they're going to be there late and they need their space. So that's not gone down particularly well. It's come in the week they've announced season ticket price drops, though. So we'll discuss that in just a second. But on the car parking front itself, Westy, should people expect to pay a little bit more for the privilege, or is it a case of a bit too much for a big of a rise?
Yeah, I don't see the thought behind it, really. I'd have thought you'd have made the car parking cheap and made sure more people came, because it is a bit of a stealth tax on your ticket, really, isn't it, to have to park your car. And I know I've been to Wigan lots of times to watch them, and it's completely free parking there. Now, whether that's because they don't get the crowds and they can't justify paying for it, or there's just a lot of parking around the stadium and it wouldn't be worth them charging anyway. But I think to charge the fans, like, what's it, £8-10 now to park your car around that area? It's a lot of money.
£230 works out about 10 or
11. Yeah, it's a lot of money extra to park your car when you're going to watch your team and you've paid for a ticket. I don't understand why they charge so much for you to park your car. Are they encouraging you onto the buses or what they're doing? I don't understand.
Well, they've said they've invested a lot in public transport, and hopefully there'll be things like, maybe one day we'll have that Green Park train station. Maybe.
Maybe
one day.
But there's still not a lot of parking around the stadium. It's like they're forcing you into the car park to charge you a lot of money for the privilege of going to watch.
That's part of the Star statement as well. They're saying about the reduction in parking spaces elsewhere as well, forcing sort of people to pay it. I can understand from a club's point of view that they need to maximise revenue to a certain extent. They're going to lose those parachute payments next season, so they're going to need to get some money in from somewhere, and especially when they're announcing that season ticket prices are going down as well. I kind of get it. Mark, what do you reckon?
Well, I think the problem is that it's not viable for home fans to travel by train because there isn't the Green Park station, as we're talking about. That's decade plus away, whatever it'll be. The issue, and you kind of touched upon it then, Westy, is that if you go to other grounds like Old Trafford, then it's a much bigger stadium, much more important football team, but there's car parks and it's all official club parking absolutely everywhere around the stadium. Now, the problem is with Reading is that there is land, but it's valuable land. So you can't just buy it up quite cheaply and stick a car park on it and think, oh, well, that'll sort that out, because people are paying millions of pounds to build homes and all kinds of bits on it. So if you look at the Greyhound track, which we have at the moment, that's loads of spare land on it. We could probably expand on it quite a lot if you chop down some bushes and what have you, puts a minor amount of investment in it, but it's too valuable in a sense to actually own and take control of. So the club are kind of caught between this sort of thing of needing a bit of extra cash, and that's one of the only things they can guarantee that people going to the game need to do.
Yeah, and it's a real shame as well. I think it's something to do with insurance reasons, but the amount of car parks around Green Park that they could easily care for every yep. single person to drive, but they just can't open them for whatever reason. I don't know if it's the businesses themselves. As I said, I think there's an insurance element to it.
But the roads they stop you parking on as well, don't they? They force you into the car parks to a certain extent, because that Green Park area, especially on a Saturday, is dead.
Well, that's what I mean. I think it's something to do with the insurance of having people in there and on the premises and stuff.
You've got people manning it and all sorts of things, haven't you?
It is a shame. Personally, I think, you know, we've been a family, myself, Wim Senior, we've never been able to afford that extra bit for a regular car parking permit. I do think if you are someone that wants to park in the stadium, have a very short walk, then yeah, you maybe deserve to pay that little bit of an extra premium.
Well, I used to have one. I used to have a car parking pass, but that's when I had five adults coming with me. We used to chip in and pay a bit each. And yeah, I used to drive, but I used to pick them up. So then it was like £25 each to park there, which was all right, fair enough. But if you're bringing, like, for now, I bring all my children with me, they're not paying any extra, so I'm footing the bill three times, four times over.
Yeah, what I can sympathise with is, and again, it's an issue that's been raised, is people that have elderly people or people with disabilities that can't walk very far,
yeah,
and they feel like they're being priced out. I like to think that the club will do something about that, and I'm sure they are in dialogue, start mentioning that they are talking to the club about various initiatives, so I'm hoping some sort of compromise can be raised on this. But we'll move on then to talk about a universally good thing. I'm sure all fans would agree. The club announcing that if you renew your season ticket before the first week of April, you'll get a discount on what is already a really low season ticket price if you compare it to some of our rivals in the Championship and especially the Premier League. And then even if you just renew slightly later, you're still going to see a freeze. Mark, it's another fantastic gesture from the football club that have done a lot now to make football affordable.
Yeah, it's certainly a good thing because they've got the 20's plenty thing in the away stand as well. So they've shown the intent, certainly, and this kind of backs it up. The thing is, I was wondering if someone like me, who can't make every game, sort of work Saturdays and a few Tuesdays, so would make maybe 10, 15 games a season max, would it be worth me buying a season ticket? So then effectively it covers the cost of what I'd be doing. But then the problem for the club is, and they've had this year certainly, is that with cheaper season tickets, people kind of think, I can miss 3-4 games and that's not a problem for them, but there are empty seats in the stadium. So that's kind of where I'm wondering as to where the trade-off is in a way.
So I think it might be good. It's good for your pocket, but it might not be as good for the atmosphere.
Yeah, in a way.
Westy?
Yeah, well, again, with season ticket prices either staying as they are or going down, I think, I know obviously it's a grand gesture and it's great for us that they've not put them up, but if they were selling out every week, they wouldn't be doing it. It's as simple as that. It's business. Keep everyone in there. While you're there, you're spending money. If you can keep your season ticket fairly low, same people come back. If they poked them up all of a sudden and it wasn't filling the stadium, which they haven't all season, I don't think there's been one game this year that was sold out. Even Newcastle game, there was quite a few empty seats. It wasn't a sellout, was it? Again, I think we delude ourselves. If that club, if Reading was selling out every week, then they would have put the season prices up, but they're not. And that's as simple as that.
Yeah, you can't... Yeah, it would have been a very, very hard sell for them to raise season ticket prices. I think you maybe... I suppose the only gamble they could have done was they could have waited to see what happened at the end of the season. And then if we'd gone up, they could have said, OK, we're only putting them up 50 quid, but that's... I suppose that's gambling itself. At least if you do it now, you get the money in the door.
It's the money now they want. Yeah, through the door. Yeah.
Yeah. So
and also, they could have raised season ticket prices and lowered match day ticket prices. But again, if we're next season, we're still in the Championship and we're 15th, then that they just won't make any money out of it.
Yeah, I mean, but whatever the reason, I think it's still nice. I think it's still one of the more affordable football teams to go and watch, in the especially for an area of the country like this. It is a fairly affluent area. You could have quite easily... Since, you know, look at what people like Arsenal are charging.
It's ridiculous price to see a team that's not that good.
Yeah. And, you know, the cost of it, what is it, for £350 over 23 league games?
I think we said as well, a lot of...
17, 16 quid a game.
A lot of the historical older season ticket holders that I've sort of was brought up with, as a lot of my dad's friends and that, have stopped going now. A lot of people I know have stopped going. And they need to build a younger fan base, and you won't do that by overcharging everybody. It's as simple as that.
Do you reckon those lower prices, will that bring any of those people back?
No.
Is it a price point or is it just a...
No, I just think they've had enough to a certain extent. From all the ones I've spoken to, they've just... I think we all remember the glory days. You know, I'm sort of in the middle, so I'm like 38 now. So I'm somewhere in the middle. But the older fans are just don't... Tuesday night's a bit cold for them, you know what I mean? I think it's got to a stage in their life where they're just not that bothered anymore. Whereas if you start charging your younger fans too much, they won't come in the first place. And they need to build a young fan base coming through. And I think that is also in the forefront of their minds.
Yep, agreed. And hopefully we'll catch up again with Mike Bradley and Adam Benson. You might remember we did our interview with them a few months ago, the club's commercial director and head of communications, and they were talking about ticket price points and things like that. So I encourage you to go back and listen, and hopefully we'll catch up with them again in the next few months, and we'll see how this has gone down. And just finally on the news bites front, we may still have 8 games of the season to go, gents, but the FL team of the season is out.
It's a bit premature.
It was announced last night. The team is David Stockdale. You got Tommy Smith, Lewis Dunk, was it Pontus Janssen from Leeds, Scott Malone, Aaron Mui, Jonjo Shelvey, Anthony Knockhart, Glenn Murray, Chris Wood and Dwight Gale. So not a Reading player in it. The initial reaction, as Will tweeted out from the account yesterday, was how on earth can you do this with 8 games to go?
It's basically like someone's picked it out of FIFA. They've just gone, I've heard of Shelvey, yeah, he's probably the best player, yeah, Gale, Janssen scored a few goals for Leeds. A few Leeds fans I saw rushing through Twitter the other day. They're saying that Kyle Bartley, his centre-back partner, is the better of the two. It's just Janssen scores the goals, and because he's like Swedish and a bit loud, he gets noticed a bit more. So, it's just one of those teams that they've picked without really thinking about it.
I think that's true pretty much every year, though.
Ian
Hart got picked, and whoever said on the show that week was Ian Hart's got picked because everyone knows who Ian Hart is. Yeah. And he scored a few goals, but was he the best left back in the league that year? I doubt it.
I don't think I can argue, in all honesty, with too many people on this team. I think Aloha Habsi has been a little harshly done. I don't know how much Stockdale's had to do. And we talked about this before we came on air as well, Westy. Jonjo Shelvey and Dwight Gale being in there, you almost think, well, you should be in there because they've, what, £25 million between them?
Yeah, if they're not in there, they've done something badly wrong, haven't they? And I think they're two names. If we sat down at the start of the season and would have wrote the team that we thought would be team this season, we'd have both put them two in it just because they are well-known footballers, especially in Shelvey's case.
Yeah. Is there any Reading player you think should be in there right now anyway?
I'd struggle to take one of them out and put a Reading player in. I think I've been saying all year, there's no one that's played for Reading this year that I think all season has been really, really good. I think people have had times where they've been all right for a couple of weeks, but we're six and sevens out of tens every week, aren't we? And there's no one that I say, actually, you've been amazing this season. So I'd be hard pushed to take any of them out and put a Reading player
in. Mark?
I think Al Habsi's the best shout. I mean, you might say the player of the season for us this year has been maybe McCleary. You're not going to take Knockhart out for McCleary in that, really, are you? Knockhart's, I don't know if he scored 15, 20 goals this year. the stats and the fact of the where the team are just show that we're more of a team than an individual.
Yeah, well, Dunk's out for most of the rest of the season, isn't he, for Brighton?
He might be. Was it?
I know he picked up an injury recently, but my point here was that Liam Moore, I think, is one that could make a run. If Reading do finish third, fourth in the table and they keep a few clean sheets between now, and I think he deserves consideration at least.
Liam Moore's probably a better footballer than both of them, arguably.
Well, we always talk about recency bias kind of with our own polls and with our own player of the seasons. Obviously, this is just something to combat recency bias and make sure that those in the first, 30 games as opposed to the last eight.
Yeah, very true. I just don't think you can... I think you've got to look at it at the end of the season. I don't understand why the... I mean, the EFL will probably... I don't know, they'll probably be able to tell you, but why it's held in the middle, pretty much the middle of March, rather than after the playoffs are done, I don't know. But oh well, that's it is what it is.
Chance to have a knees up in March.
Probably. Well, indeed, yeah. Bit fill a date on the social calendar.
Yeah.
Anyway, that does wrap up news bites. Oh, sorry, one last thing to plug is the Star Hall of Fame. We mentioned this last week, but just a reminder, it's taking place on Thursday, March the 30th in the Princess Suite at the Badesky Stadium. It is free if you are a Star member, and it's free even if you're not a Star member. All you have to do is email Star, get your name on the guest list, simply because there is a finite capacity. So we're going to be there. There's going to be a few other people manning sort of stands and things like that. So come and say hello. I will be there. Becca will be there as well, and I think Bucks Royal is finally rounding out our little contingent. I think Wim Senior's popping along as well.
Yeah.
So there you go. And Mark, are you coming?
No.
No.
What player's going to be there?
Oh, I don't know who the inductees are this year.
Oh, they keep it secret, don't they?
Yes, until it's announced. I can tell you that I voted on some of the later era players. They sort of divided voters up into sort of Generation Z, because obviously I can't vote on players from the 60s.
Yeah, I think I'd done it once as a vote, yeah.
So, and all of the names on there are some very worthy candidates. So whoever gets in, it's only the second time they've inducted people, so there's lots of very deserving names to go in. So
I'll go along when we get inducted in, for services to social media.
It's Alistair going to the... Yeah,
you might be waiting a long time for that.
I think we're behind Sir Dodger Royal and people like that.
Probably.
Yeah. Anyway, that does wrap up News Bites. We'll go on to the mailbag, but Westy, it's a small one.
Surprise.
Yeah, I know. But anyway, we'll get to it, because it's not about the quantity, it's the quality.
Quality.
And that comes up next.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast. Read the blog on thetarlhurstend.com.
So as mentioned, it's about the quality. So, and those of you who have taken the time to drop us a mail to @thetarlhurstend on Twitter, thetarlhurstend@gmail.com or facebook.com/thetarlhurstend. We very much appreciate all of you, and those of you who have left comments over at youtube.com/thetarlhurstend. That's another thing for me to remember each week and not cock up. So I've done it so far this week. But anyway, let's get into it. Luke Jarrett says, taking the league as it is now, how do the playoffs play out? Who's in the final and who wins it? So if the playoffs were being played today, it would be Huddersfield against Sheffield Wednesday and Leeds against Reading. Reading would be at home in the first leg.
Do you know what? I think you want Leeds in the playoff semi-finals rather than the final. I think if you're going to beat them, you're better off getting them out of the way, because you don't want to be playing them at Wembley.
Mm.
Not with their contingent. I mean, it's bad enough in the semi-finals having to go there, but I think over two legs we've got a good chance of beating them. But in the final, I think they just might get overawed by the whole occasion. And Leeds, they're due a good season, aren't they? They've had so many bad seasons over the last 10 years that they are due a bit of luck here and there. And I think you want to play. I think they'll get to the final if Reading don't beat them in the semis. Whoever Leeds play. No, I'll say if they don't play Reading, if they play Huddersfield or Sheffield Wednesday, okay, they will beat them and end up in the final.
So are you saying Leeds are going to win the whole thing then?
I'd say Leeds have got as much chance as any of others, but I think Reading will have to beat them if they're going to go to Premier League.
Okay, so Reading are going to have to beat Leeds at some stage. Mark?
Yeah, there's that thing. If you go into Elland Road in the second leg, you've got to, if you concede two goals early on, you're finished, because they're going to be so up for it and so on top of it. But if you get a couple of goals, then they can crumble more than any other team, a la Cardiff a couple of years ago. So there is always that that chance. Then Huddersfield in the final, I would imagine they beat Sheffield Wednesday. And they're an inexperienced side. They're not the fan base of Leeds that's going to roar them on. I think you've got a really good chance of beating them in the final.
I don't know who I'd want. Do you know what? If I would take anybody, I'd almost take Huddersfield. Because I'm still not that impressed by Huddersfield. And we saw on Tuesday night they got absolutely hammered. Friday night they played. Time as us. Yeah, Friday. 4-0 hammering at Bristol City. I watched them come to Reading. I always thought they good side. They had the man sent off and that played a part. And the away game as well. I think Reading had a lot of chances.
Yeah, we should. Again, another night we probably would have beat them.
So I would take Huddersfield at any stage of the playoffs for Reading. I almost wouldn't mind Reading finishing sixth, because if Huddersfield finished third, they're probably going to be on that downer from missing out on automatic promotion. I think Reading can take them, especially, you know, having that home leg first.
As again, I don't. When you look at the four teams, you can't say that anyone stands out as they're definitely going to win it. But I just think the Reading will have to beat Leeds at some stage to go.
Yeah, I know the question from Luke is if it is now, but expanding that, if Fulham are in there, I don't want Fulham either.
No, but then they're all susceptible to getting a hammering, aren't they? I think all them teams in the top four, have taken a beating at some stage. There's not anyone that you think, oh, they're really good. Even Fulham, I thought when I see them down there, I thought they were a good side. And obviously up there, they hammered us. But they're not a great side, are they? Even Brighton's not a great side. Newcastle's not great sides. They're all beatable. It's just a matter of putting two games together. That's all you really got to do. You don't even have to put three good games together, just two, and that'll get you in the Premier League.
Okay, well, Mark, who do you think, as the question asked, if it is now, who does win through it? Who wins the final?
As it is now, I agree that Leeds are probably the team that I would pick. Huddersfield I wouldn't want to rule out, but I would probably say Leeds, just on the sheer weight of these. The teams I always think win the playoffs are the teams that have that extra little bit. Like Swansea had that little bit about them when they played us under Rodgers. You see Burnley when they've gone through Hull last year, and I would say that the team with that extra little bit of like kind of history on their side would be Leeds at the moment.
And now exciting to watch. I said earlier when I've been watching Leeds, they're an exciting team to watch. They've got pace on the wings, and obviously they've got Wood putting the ball in there. What we really need is someone to crock Wood, and then I think that'll be the end of it. So hopefully that'll happen.
Excellent. You know, we wish no injury upon anyone.
Well, I sort of do.
Like a mild,
not a bad injury.
He can have a mild cold or something like that.
He can feel absolutely fine after the final whistle.
Pulled hamstring.
Like dead leg, just a 90-minute dead leg.
Anything.
Okay, that's fine.
Get him out the side.
Okay, all right.
Someone, please.
Hide his boots.
Yeah, if anything happens to Chris Wood now, you are number one to Westie.
If he's been shot, then yeah, there might be number one.
Yeah, definitely. Anyway, if you need to know Alan West's address, Mr. Please. Policeman, I'll pass it on to you.
This is a secret location, though.
Yeah, absolutely. They're on their way. Anyway, that moves on. Hope we've answered your question there, Luke. For the record, I would say Leeds will beat Huddersfield in the final if it plays out like this as well.
Oh, well, no.
Yeah. Raw Hoops, Steve Curtis, who's been on this very show many a time, says, where would Reading be without Ali Alhabsi? Would they be in the top six if we had had Anzi Yokola in goal this season?
This is such a question you can't answer, really. Again, if Yokola come in, he'd bring different elements to goalkeeping to us, wouldn't he? Like I say, he might be better. I've not seen him that much, to be honest, to have a comment on him, but he might be a better footballer now, Alhabsi. Is he a better shot stopper? Probably not. Does he command his box better? We don't know.
Yeah, as good as Ali Alhabsi's been, and we spent a large part of the first half of this show praising him, I don't think he's been the X factor.
No, I thought Alhabsi was probably better last year than this. And
really?
I thought at the start of this season, he was really good. But I think he's had a patch where either he's not had to do so much or we just haven't noticed him so much. He's certainly not made too many mistakes this year, apart from the odd one in the cup. And I think there's one or two that he's got away with. But where would we be? I still think we'd be in the top six. I think it's a team game, and I don't think one player would make that massive difference.
I'd say if you're going to take the predecessor to Alhabsi, if we had Federici in goal, then yeah, we'd be in exactly the same position, I think.
Jonathan Bond?
Well, then no, maybe not. No.
Yeah, the thing is with Bond is that he could have grown into the role quite a lot, and obviously that was quite a long time ago that he was actually in the side. So he, by now, could be a very good goalkeeper if he'd avoided injuries, etc. I don't think we'd be too much further down. He's not single-handedly won that many points that I can think of. Sheffield Wednesday being a recent example, but other than that, I'm struggling to...
Penalty save, he made a couple of penalties.
But anyone can make penalty saves, really.
Yeah, this is true.
You could say that about any footballer in that team. You know, what about if Moore wasn't there all season? What about McShane wasn't there all season? You know, what about if Kermigan wasn't up front all season? McCleary, when he had his purple patch, you know what I mean? You could say it about anyone, and would they have dropped down? Well, who would have taken their place? Would they have stepped up to the mark? They might well have done.
I think I certainly think we're a few points better off of Alhabsi than Yokola, but I don't think it's a case of, we'd be 15th.
I mean, a good goalkeeper will get you more points than your striker. I mean, I remember the year that Reading were excellent and his lot was in goal. He must have gotten 30 points that season with some of the saves he made. And
Dominate.
It does make a big difference, you know what I mean? But would be a lot lower? I don't think so.
Okay, well, speaking of important players, Alex Everson asks, who are the first three names on the in the side? Sorry, who are the first three names on the team sheet from now to the end of the season?
Do you know what we're going to say, Mark? Ali Habsi, definitely. He's kept, yeah, he's kept us in so many games this
25
season.
25 points. X-factor.
If he wasn't there, we'd be a lot lower. Again, Kermigan, I think when they've not had him, they've missed him. So that'd be my one that I'd pick. I don't want to pick one each, make it hard.
I was going to say Kermigan, Moore and McShane.
Yeah, I don't think you can argue.
Yeah, I think Moore and McShane is a pretty important centre-back partnership. Maybe one other you could add in there. Possibly Vandenberg as someone who just adds that extra little bit, not necessarily to a great standard, but without him, possibly you'd find the team wanting.
He does make the Stam system click, doesn't he, for some reason?
He definitely has been good in big games recently. And again, McCleary, when McCleary's on fire, then he's very difficult to play against.
So who are your three then?
So I would say McCleary, Moore and Kermigan.
Mark?
I'd have McShane, Kermigan and Moore.
Okay. And finally, from Louis Burton. With an international break coming up, bar Nicky Shorey, are there any other Reading players you felt could have played for England?
What, in recent times or now? Or?
Let's limit it, I suppose, to the Medeski era.
I remember
we did see people like Neil Webb get England honours. And
okay.
Dave Kitson had a good shout in the 2008-09 season, was it?
7-8?
Yeah, the year we got relegated. He was the top English goal scorer, I think, for large parts of that season, if not all of it. And there was a lot of talk about him being called up to the England squad, but he didn't actually get bought into it.
Yeah, which was a shame, because like I say, he was on fire at that time. But is he an England international forward? I think not.
I don't know.
Yeah, that was kind of around the time like Dave Nugent was getting called up and that sort of stuff. So there's always like the
ones,
weak
yeah.
strikers.
If his move to Stoke hadn't gone so horrendously badly, I don't know how good Dave Kitson could have been.
I think to be an England international, you have to be consistent over a lot of seasons. I mean, I don't agree with Defoe being picked. I think it's a ridiculous step backwards. Why are you putting a 34-year-old striker in the England side? I don't get that. I know he's scoring this season in a poor side, but over the course of 20 years of his career, has he been a definite England starter? You know, not 20 years, but 10 years, 15 years, however long it's been. Has he been a definite England starter? Even when he was at his peak, he wasn't an England starter. So why is he getting picked now? I don't get that. But as for Reading players, I don't think that anyone... I mean, would you pick a Reading midfielder over the last 15 years to take Gerrard, Lampard and Scholes? And
Sidwell was about as close as you come, but that's pushing it.
Yeah, and they'll say he didn't, when he went to Chelsea, he didn't hardly play. So he wasn't good enough. Simple as that. I think it's a big step up to play for England.
A good question to ask now is, would the Shorey of 2007 get into the England side of now? Because England at the moment have loads of left backs. They've got Danny Rose, Ryan Bertrand, you know.
Sure, at his peak I think it's better than Bertrand.
Yeah, I think he's a better footballer, but nowadays they want someone who's a complete athlete and is basically a wing back, and I think he wouldn't have got into it now. But as a footballer, yeah, brilliant. Sure, he's brilliant. But then what did he get, 4 caps? I mean, I think that's probably about his level. He was never going to be first pick for England, was he? And that's about the best we had to offer.
Alex McCarthy was on the track, I think, to be certainly an England squad member.
He got called up once, yeah.
Yeah, he did. I mean, you look at what Heaton does for Burnley. I think you watch Alex McCarthy's performance against Liverpool. Fantastic.
Oh, yeah, he's brilliant. But then it's not about having one or two good games, is it? It's about being consistently good.
I thought he was consistently good. His problem is that he stayed with a relegated team for Reading. He then made his move to the Premier League and it went horribly wrong because he got caught behind Rob Green in the form of his life. And then he's picked two awful moves in going to Palace and he's basically given up being number one because he went to sit on Southampton's bench behind Fraser Forster. And I think he's just settled into, oh, I quite like being a Premier League footballer, but I'm not actually that bothered about playing.
Yeah, again, but then it's an attitude, isn't it?
Yeah.
If you're good enough, then cream rises to the top, and obviously McCarthy ain't good enough. And I always thought his kicking was poor anyway, and again, that's a major part of being a goalkeeper nowadays. You have to be able to play football, and McCarthy's not that sort of goalkeeper.
Yeah, I would, as a kind of curveball to that question, are there any Reading players who weren't English but were good enough to play for England in the last...
Sigurdsson would have played for England. I think Sigurdsson was.
At the time he was playing for us, though, or not until the like Swansea Spurs days?
I think now he'd be in the squad.
Oh, yeah, now, yeah.
Definitely.
Well, I think he was, obviously, has Sigurdsson improved that much since he left Reading?
I think he's a more of an athlete now. He's the hardest working player in the Premier League, according to some stat that Swansea said.
But I mean, that would just would have come, I suppose, from experience. I mean, that was his first season at championship level. But
I mean, Sigurdsson, you always had to find a place for Sigurdsson where he could play where he wanted to, because he wasn't a central midfielder, was he? He still isn't. He's more of a number 10 type player, isn't he, where he scores a lot of goals, but he's not a midfielder. So you had to find a place for Sigurdsson to play. And I think now he's at Swansea, they've obviously found that position for him. But yeah, Sigurdsson would be, even if he was English, he would be, I reckon, he'd be in the squad. Especially when you see some of the caps they dish out to players that I've barely heard of.
Shane Long, I think, would get in this. At Shane Long's peak, would have got into as a fourth or fifth England forward. If you look at, again, some of the dross that have made it.
Again, if Shane Long was that good, he'd be playing every week, and he's not.
He's playing most weeks.
So. Yeah, only because Charlie Austin's injured, though.
True, but Charlie Austin is
ex-Reading player.
Yeah, there you go.
That's one.
Anyway, an interesting topic. Thanks for that, Louis. We'll, if you've got any suggestions, send them in at The Tireless End on Twitter, thetirelessend@gmail.com, and facebook.com/thetirelessend, and youtube.com/thetirelessend. And again, just a massive thank you to everyone who has contributed to that Patreon campaign at patreon.com/thetirelessend. I sent off a few Tireless End mugs this morning, so that's the reward of you donate on the top tier. But for whatever level you donate, whether it's $1.15 or whatever you choose to give, it makes such a big difference to what we can do here. And you know, it's not just a little pat on the back, it makes practical differences as well. So thank you very, very much to everyone who continues to show their support in that way. Anyway, we'll move on to just a couple of procedural things in any other business, but we're not going to preview the Leeds game because that's 2 weeks away. So we'll move on to any other business and then we'll wrap up.
The Tirelessend End Podcast.
Any other business?
So I was mentioned just before the sting, we're not going to look ahead to the Leeds game. It's 2 weeks away now on the telly on Sky Sports, but we'll have plenty of preview material up on the tirelessend.com as well. But it's International Week, gents. Fan of those?
No, hate them.
No. Interesting to see if people like Liam Kelly get any action.
Yeah, he's in like a 35-man squad, yeah. So I'd be shocked. I think the only thing that I kind of enjoy about International Week is that they spread it out so much, so you basically got a game every night, haven't
That's
you?
That's true. Yeah. Good chance for running to rest up as well. We mentioned Paul McShane being injured. Hopefully, the talk of him being in contention for that game, so hopefully he can recover as well. Stephen Quinn played a little bit for the under-23s of the night. Hopefully he's nearing a return. Dennis Rackles is in the Latvia squad, so he's one to keep an eye out. Callum Harriott as well. Hopefully he can make some progress as well. Thiago Alori should be nearing that injury return as well.
Yeah, I was just about to ask about that because it's been a good 6 weeks now that we haven't seen
him. Yeah, that was the initial time frame because it was right at the start of February, wasn't it? Just after he joined.
I think it was the Fulham game.
He injured himself coming on. He tweaked ligaments or something. Yeah.
I mean, he might be a shout for the back end of the season, you know. He might be one of those players that sort of emerges and becomes integral.
Well, you look at the role that someone like a Matt Upson had.
Yeah.
But he came on for a short period of time. Now he really turned the defence around. He only played he made that one start against Derby and did okay.
Matt Upson was brilliant. Absolutely fantastic football.
Well, there you go. There's another Reading player for England.
Well, he did after he left us, didn't he?
Scored against Germany in the World Cup.
Awesome.
So, a few bits and pieces to keep an eye out for. As far as we're concerned, there will be no podcast in the traditional sense next week. Hopefully, we're going to have an interview special up. Just waiting for the final edit to come through on that. So stay tuned for that. Hopefully we're going to get that interview with Lee Heron, the Reading Academy manager. That will go up next week, all things being well, but there'll be no discussion point between our good selves. We'll be back after the Leeds game for that. As mentioned, a lot of people have been asking what's happened to the podcast extra. As I said a couple of times, it's just a case of just since Charles is gone, it's been difficult to try and get that relationship back up and running. So what we have done is launch the Pub Chat Extra. If you go over to the YouTube channel, myself, Westy and Rob Langham last week, we looked at Reading youth players that sort of never made it. We basically felt the Pub Chat in this show was sort of making the show a bit too long. So we've taken it out and used it to sort of fill that content gap. So go and subscribe over there. Hopefully it'll be worth your while. And we're going to record one in the next few minutes looking at managers in the Championship and whether they're given enough time. So that'll be up in the next couple of days as well. In the meantime, I said stay tuned to thetirelessend.com. Thanks to all of the Patreon supporters out there. And gentlemen, thank you too for joining us this week.
It's an absolute pleasure, as always.
No worries, thank you.
Right, and in the meantime, as always, go on you arse.
Funny how the crowds always leave a trail. You smile, you smile. Funny how the crowds always leave a trail. You know when it seems as though you're trapped. Funny how the crowds.
get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
at the Tarlhurst End
and facebook.com/thetarlhurstend.